Welcome into Husker Max. Today, I'm Caleb Henry alongside Nick Hanley. It is Big Ten baseball tournament week, and we said on Monday, I hope we are talking later this week about Nebraska with a chance to win the pool on Friday, and here we are because the Huskers got all of the late-inning luck. Again, it's really weird to watch this team, not to say that things don't go wrong late innings at times, but for a team, Nick, that's just above 500, it is astounding this season how many times they have come through in the eighth or the ninth inning or extra innings, walk-offs, especially over the last few weeks, the walk-offs. But to get things done now for a sixth straight win in Omaha in the Big Ten Conference Tournament going back to last year, how bonkers was Monday night at Charles Schwab Field?
I don't even know where to reset it because it is, I mean, we're two days after the fact, right? And I'm still, yesterday morning, myself, Ben McLaughlin, and Jared Meister, the sports information director, we're on a text chain, and I can't remember who even started it. Oh, I think I was the first one. I'm like, did that really happen last night? And we were all still talking about how we were in disbelief of what took place. I know when Ben and I were walking out of the stadium that night, we're still just looking at each other and trying to make sense of it, really. Because if you were to paint the scenario that took place Tuesday night, where I would say this, Joseph Jurwa wasn't his best Big Ten pitcher of the year self, but he was still effective. And it was exactly what Ben and I talked about in the pregame, that if you're going to have your opening, you got to take advantage in the first and the second inning. And that's where Nebraska had a little bit of an opening. He was settling into the start. And lo and behold, you don't get as much. You tie the game up 1-1. But then Ty Horn, who's in command for a while, then all of a sudden walks three consecutive. And then you have the balk, you know, one of those flukish plays that just you don't see a whole heck of a lot. That yields to one run. Then later, you get the Tucker Timmerman pickoff attempt where he spikes the ball, and you can see he's in between thought as he spins thinking, okay, disengagement, or do we have the pickoff play set up? And all of a sudden, all that leads to him just spiking the ball into the ground, scores a run, and you can see him just wearing that decision on his face. So all of a sudden, you give Joseph Jurwa, the Big Ten Pitcher of the Year, a three-run cushion, and just about every appearance and start that he's had this year, that's smelling blood in the water, and he has not disappointed. So you fast forward into the sixth where Nebraska is able to chip away. Case Sanderson gets the two RBI single, and now it's a one-run game. Okay, it's tightening things up. Michigan State ends up going to their bullpen. But if you would have told me that scenario that Joseph Jurwa was going to go into the fifth and sixth inning with a three-run cushion, I would not have liked any team, let alone Nebraska, but any team in the Big Ten's chances, because he has beat some of the very best teams in the Big Ten that they have faced with Joseph Jurwa going and having that type of a cushion late in the game, because he's got big league stuff. This guy's going to be maybe a late first rounder, second round, third round draft pick. Then there's a reason. I mean, he's really, really good. Yeah. And yet somehow, like you said, Caleb, this team figures out ways, whether it's baseball things or things that I can't even explain, how the ball comes out of Parker Pico's glove, things like that, that just don't make any sense other than our friend looking down on us and Greg Sharp. I don't even know how to explain what happened. And then to see Nebraska, you know, because then you're still wondering, okay, they tie the game up. Now here's the other funny part about this. If you watch the video while Joshua Overbeek is just going nuts at first base, you're going to see kind of a stone cold face on Lance Harvell. Well, they know that Beek should have been at second.
Yes.
Because the next batter's Caden Brumbaugh. He doubles. The game should be over in the bottom of the ninth.
Yep.
But you know what? That wouldn't be on brand, right? We got to have a little extra dramatics here.
Which, by the way, because he was on first, my initial, as the play was happening with that double, the next batter, I was going, send him. I watched the replay. I went, good hold. He would have not just been hosed.
Yeah.
The catcher would have had the ball before Beek was halfway home.
Right.
Like, I was just like, oh, yeah, that was a good decision. I didn't have the angle.
And Mike, so I was watching Mike Sirianni the whole time. So initially, had, this was when Beek was halfway between second and third. He's winding him. And I would say by the time Mike Sirianni finally stopped his momentum, he was more than halfway down between third and home, where he's watching that entire play come in and he's seeing the entire field where that trajectory of the throw is. And good on Joshua Overby too, to pick up Sirianni at the last moment and point, hey, nope, we're holding up here, because now we're, as opposed to a very high risk, obviously high reward, but probably a very low percentage scoring opportunity there. Now you're a base hit away from winning it. And it just seemed like Nebraska had so much momentum after that drop line drive that, okay, why not second and third? Someone else just knock one through the infield and the game's over. Didn't happen until the 10th inning, but my gosh, it just, and you're right. It feels like just a month of these types of moments, because not only the walk-offs, but the Thursday night game against Purdue, where all of a sudden you find yourself down 8-0 and you fire back. And so there's a lot about this team. And I think this goes back to some of the earlier discussions you and I had about this team going into the season of, at some point this year, that experience has to matter. At some point this year, the amount of at-bats collectively these guys have had, the amount of innings these guys have had on the mound collectively, and the amount of defensive reps that these guys have, the baseballs that they've handled collectively, have to matter, have to mean something. And I think what you've seen in the last month, I think that's a product of it. I really do. I think that's the experience, that there's nothing that this team is going to experience in the game, adversity-wise, that's going to bring them down to their knees where they're waving surrender.
Well, how many guys came up to the plate because of all of those things with experience in the 9th and in the 10th that have been in those exact positions a dozen times this season, to where you're down to your last out,
right,
and you're losing, or you're in extras and a base hit walks it off? Like Robbie Boland just did this a couple weeks ago. You know, like you're going through and you're seeing Gabe Swanson come up to the plate. You're like, well, that feels pretty good. Oh, right. Overbeek's up to them. That feels pretty good. It's all the same guys who've been doing this because they've had so many opportunities. And some of that is that it is a team that's hovering around 500 for the season, so they're in a lot of close games. But because they have that experience and they're into the postseason, to where it's, for them, win or you're done, they get into those moments. And it's not something new to them, to where it's win or go home. But also, we've never been in a tight game. That's not what Nebraska is facing. And now tomorrow night, they'll get another win or go home game.
And this is where I don't want to say, especially if you stack the season numbers next to each other between Oregon and Nebraska, and you look at anything decisively that favors Nebraska, there is one X factor in this game that's not going to show up on a stat sheet, and that's what type of crowd Nebraska will be feeling tomorrow. And it just, I think it really hammers home the point that Nebraska has to make Oregon aware of them, meaning they need to either punch first or they need to be on their heels the entire way, because then that crowd is sensing, you know, something's brewing. We know this Nebraska team feeds off of that. And for this Oregon team, this is a great baseball team. They are one of the best baseball teams in the country. But the good thing is Nebraska's faced a handful of those teams in the non-conference, and then, you know, obviously playing UCLA in the conference. And they've had some varieties of success. The Oregon State one being one of those. They had a shot to beat LSU. They beat Vanderbilt. So I think there's confidence when it comes to that. But now all of a sudden, there's no limitations of what you can do with the attendance compared to Haymarket Park. I mean, if you want 15,000, you can get 15,000. If you want more than that, you can get more than that. And so these are still college kids. And when you're not playing, and when you haven't played in that environment, college kids can do some really weird things. Some can thrive off of it if you're the away team, or I guess you're the team that's not Nebraska, because
the home team is not from here.
Oregon will be the home team on the scoreboard. But you know, sometimes that moment can get really big, and you can lose command of a fastball, or you can hang a breaking ball that they're able to take advantage of, or in certain cases you could have a routine fly coming your way, and all of a sudden you don't make the play. So I think Nebraska putting themselves in that situation where this game is actually meaningful for something, this game is meaningful for Nebraska to still have a shot to defend that Big Ten tournament title from a year ago, all of those things factor in, because you and I talked about this. It would have been a shame if that matchup between a marquee opponent in Oregon and Nebraska at 6 o'clock on a holiday weekend in downtown Omaha would be meaningless. Mm-hmm. And I think the crowd honestly would have reflected that. I just don't think you would have had nearly as many people as you potentially could have tomorrow night. We're crossing our fingers that the weather is going to cooperate for that evening game. But still, this is a big moment for this team. But I don't think they look at it as, oh my gosh, this is do or die. I think they realize, hey, it's all on them. Let's put the pressure on them. Yeah, sure. They're going to still be able to go to the NCAA tournament. We've got to win. But this thing's been a blast. This last month, I mean, there's nothing anybody can throw at this team where all of a sudden it completely derails them to the point that they can't recover. So that's what I've liked about them. I said it before. I just think that this goes back to the Will Bolt mentality, the culture that he has built, where you get a bunch of dudes, A, you recruit like-minded guys, but also guys who are able to, especially some of those young guys, that are able to adjust their competitive nature and the success they've had in high school baseball into that collegiate success, but also that mindset that we've seen a lot of freshmen be able to make that transition as well. So it could be a really fun night tomorrow night. I think it really has the potential to be a fun night, regardless of whether Nebraska is on the better side of the scoreboard or not. You're going to get, I think, a maximum effort, and you're going to see this team playing loose. And when this team is playing loose, they're damn fun to watch and they're damn tough to beat.
And playing in a game that matters. That's all I care about for Nebraska, because there are a lot of teams. You've got four games today, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is of any consequence.
Yeah.
And they moved the Iowa game.
I get to PA announce that one, too. I'm really excited.
Yeah, look at that. You get the one that actually
Penn
matters.
State, USC, baby. Let's go.
Which is weird, because everyone was expecting the early game Friday to be the one that mattered in that pool.
Yep.
With USC Washington. But the Iowa game got moved off of Friday because of that weather that you mentioned. So they're trying to play four today. That last game being Iowa, Indiana at 9 o'clock tonight. And if days one and two are any indication of staying on schedule, look out for a 10 o'clock first pitch tonight from the Chuck.
At the very least.
At the earliest.
Yeah.
That you're going to see there. As of now, the games on Friday are still scheduled for 10 a.m., 6 p.m., the Huskers being that late one. That 10 a.m. game, of no consequence. There are two games left out of these last six games to be played that will determine who moves on to the semifinals. It's asinine. It's dumb. It's stupid. Whatever way you want to put it, it's the same stuff we said on Monday, but now we're actually getting to see it play out and see how dumb it is. But what we get as Husker fans, what we get as Husker media, what we get as people who are interested in this team is that Nebraska doesn't have to play in one of those games.
Right.
Nebraska won on Tuesday and now is playing in a game of consequence on Friday. We already have half the semifinals determined. UCLA and Iowa will play the late game on Saturday. And now waiting to see if it is Nebraska or Oregon taking on the winner of today's one of the afternoon games, USC and Penn State. Penn State being the bottom seed in that pool, but they got by Washington the other day. So as you look at Oregon, because this is where it is, you got to get by Oregon. And if you do that, it feels like anything is possible once you get to the weekend, because you're out of the pool. I know if you look at it as a week-long thing, Nebraska's been playing single elimination since Tuesday. But it feels different when you get to the weekend and you get yourself into a bracket and it's out of the pool. How does Nebraska make that happen tomorrow night against Oregon, the number one seed in the league and co-champion with UCLA?
I think you're doing the exact same thing you did on Tuesday night, minus the weirdness, minus the the consecutive walks, minus the balk, minus the back pick spike. And again, those, the last two I mentioned are extremely rare. How many times do you see a balk multiple times in a tournament? And I've never seen the back pick wheel and spike before as well. But
how many times do you see an outfielder drop a last out of a game?
And okay, so Caleb, real quickly on that. I've been talking about this a lot lately, because this has been a lot of Michael Brunson and I were texting about this, and it makes more sense to drop a ball like that that maybe has a little bit of loft to it, that has a little bit of pop fly feel to it, mm-hmm. that maybe it gets caught for a moment in the glare of the light bank. If I'm playing outfield and you give me the option of being able to make a play on a ball that Parker Pico dropped or a ball that has a little bit more loft and a little bit more of a pop fly, I want that line drive every day of the week, because yes. you don't have really anything. Like, if there's any wind, it's not really going to be impacted by the wind. If you have sunlight, it's not going to be impacted by the sunlight. If you have lights, it's not going to be impacted by the light. You're tracking that thing the entire way. The only thing, and this is why I kept going back to it, the only thing that could happen on a ball that has not necessarily topspin, but more line drive trajectory is it could maybe run at you at the last moment, or it can dive on you at the last moment. This one did not. I mean, it just flat out hit his glove. You know, it was everything that you would want that ball to be if you're a defender to make that catch. It happened. And at first, I initially thought maybe he snapped his glove a split second too early. That wasn't the case. It mm-hmm. literally just popped out of the palm of his glove, and I can't make any sense of that. That was one of the most flukish plays for a guy who made what I think was a game-saving catch two innings prior, where mm-hmm. he ends up coming in, catching it where he hits his knee and still secures it, and where he caught the ball was essentially with his glove vertical like this, and it comes right down in his palm, and he secures that. That is an extremely difficult play, and he completed it, made a great play. Yeah. It was the routine play that ate him up, unfortunately, for Michigan State. But going back to what Nebraska needs to do to put themselves in that position, they didn't get overwhelmed by who was on the mound. They didn't get overwhelmed by, there's a 3-run lead, and Joseph Jur was going, we're cooked. Mm-hmm. And this is where I think it goes back to the type of pitchers that they've seen this year, but also, like you brought up, the situations that they've been in, especially recently, where they've just had that, you know, never die mentality. And so I think if you got to eliminate the crooked inning early in this game, more than anything. And so for Nebraska to be on point defensively, you cannot give free passes to this Oregon team, because they're going to bomb you with it. I mean, this is an offensively gifted team, and it's a team that are going to make you pay for more mistakes than you want to offer up. So you got to be sharp from a pitching standpoint. You got to be sharp defensively, but you also have to have some offensive punch. And I thought what Nebraska, their overall approach, now, mind you, they've seen a lot of those guys in the lineup had seen Joseph Jerwin the last couple of years, more so than they've ever seen Grayson Grinzel. But Grinzel is if Joseph Jerwa was the Big Ten pitcher of the year, Grinzel is 1B. I mean, mm-hmm. he's very, very good. His numbers would tell you the exact same thing. Jerwa came in with 98 strikeouts. Grinzel has, I think, 93. Okay, so the numbers are very similar. He's a lefty. A lot of the similar velocity track points. Their release is a little different, but other than that, you know. But for Nebraska to be able to, even if they're not necessarily driving the ball through the infield at first, getting solid contact, letting Grayson Grinsell know that, hey, they're able to swing it a little bit. Keeping the fans engaged on this thing too. That's why you got to avoid those crooked numbers. This is all the first three innings of this game, in my opinion. And if you can, lo and behold, even get out to a lead, this is where I want to see how Oregon responds too. Because, yeah, Oregon wants to be Big Ten tournament champions and everything like that, but they also know that they've got bigger things in front of them. There's a good shot that they're hosting, at least the first round of the regionals. And so this is a team that could have more of their sights on the following week as well, if you put that in their mind, if you're able to get your own big inning, your own crooked number, and that crowd starts getting really behind this team. I mean, I'm not saying that this is a soft Oregon team, but let's face it, their postseason prospects are a lot different than Nebraska's postseason prospects right now too. So I just think that early on in the first three innings, Nebraska has to be there. You can't go into that fourth inning where you all of a sudden you're chasing 5 or 6 runs, because this Oregon team is just too damn good to be able to expect to come back from that deficit. Now, if that happened, Caleb, as I say that, would anybody still completely write Nebraska off? I think you'd be crazy to do so, but you don't want to put yourself in that position against this Oregon team. They're too good, because I think they get out to a four or five run lead early in this thing in the first three innings. There's a good shot that they're able to double that within the next couple.
Let me start with recognizing we have a little bias. Like, there is a little bias in any of this. But you look at Friday, you look at a potential Saturday, and then a potential Sunday for a team that has a lot of guys that made this run a year ago that are still around. Whether they were playing or not, they got the experience of going through Omaha. And boy, you ran through a lot of guys a year ago just to get through six games over the course of that tournament. And that's one of the reasons they changed this dumbass format. But you look at single elimination, got it done the other night. In a one-off game, Nebraska has proved that they can play well with a series against Oregon State, but also you look at like Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. Nebraska has shown in a one-off game, it really doesn't matter what the odds look like. How do you view the odds for this team in... There's not going to be an at-large. They got to win their way in and taking it one game at a time. Oregon Friday, potential semifinal Saturday, potential championship Sunday. How do you look at the next few days for this ball club?
I look at it very positively, and this, again, goes back to the unique format and the pool that Nebraska found themselves in Pool A, that you would have those 2 days off. Because they will have all hands on deck again tomorrow night when they roll out. Drew Christo can come back. Luke Broderick can come back. Hell, if you would need Ty Horn because of a matchup to go after a hitter, he could come back and give you at least one batter. Tucker Timmerman could do the same thing. Now, I don't expect either one of those guys to factor in tomorrow night, but Drew Christo and Luke Broderick, absolutely I do. Mm-hmm. And so then you, depending on what type of arms you go through, then it becomes, okay, more traditional of every day you're grinding. But at that point, okay, well, let's say Tucker Timmerman and Ty Horn don't have an arm, but you still get through on Friday. They have an arm. They just don't get through. They don't throw on Friday.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, those guys are a little bit more locked and loaded for a Saturday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of unique ways you can go about this on a Saturday. And here's the advantage, I think, for really any team. And this is Nebraska or any of the teams in the semifinals. But if you didn't play on Tuesday, but you played Wednesday and Thursday, if you're trying to bring back an ace, you're on shorter rest. Mm-hmm. But if you played on Tuesday, well, you've got guys that are a little bit more on the 3 to 4 day rest that you could come back with on that semifinal. So I think what Nebraska is going to see from a pitching standpoint, if they were able to get through tomorrow night, is going to be much less than what they saw on Tuesday and Friday. I mean, you're Nebraska will have to have gone through the two best pitchers in the Big Ten. And that's no disrespect to Cade Obermeuler, because I think he's also right there, but they wouldn't face Cade Obermeuler because he threw last night. So you would have gone through two of the best pitchers without seeing Cade Obermeuler getting to the semifinals, where I think you could at least breathe a sigh of relief from that standpoint, but you'd have to still obviously do your part offensively. So I think Nebraska feels like getting to the semifinals, they will have done the heavy lifting. And again, this is the mentality. We talk about the mentality of a college kid. You get through that part and all of a sudden it's party time, because the attendance will only swell.
Mm-hmm.
It'll get even bigger and bigger, which obviously favors Nebraska. They played in that environment before. They love it. It's kind of that party time feel for them. So if they get through, I'll say this, and this is caught bias, whatever, that's fine. I understand that. If Nebraska gets through tomorrow night, in my opinion, they're the most dangerous team left.
Mm-hmm. And I think the one that's accurate too, I think the Big Ten, although Oregon is the conference champion, and I know a lot of people, the Big Ten doesn't want Nebraska to do good in anything. The Big Ten wants Nebraska playing on the weekend.
Absolutely. Right?
The Big Ten wants that ticket money, that sweet, sweet weekend.
Oh, move. You want Iowa, Nebraska in a semifinal. Yes. That's what I'm saying
is you want Nebraska playing in the first semifinal, followed by Iowa fans there for the second semifinal. Mm-hmm. That's what the Big Ten wants this weekend. And make no mistake about it, the Big Ten wants it to be Nebraska-Iowa on Sunday. Yep. You want the two closest fan bases to be there as long as possible. And it worked out for the Big Ten this week that you got to, and because they changed the schedule around, you got to have Nebraska or Iowa every day this week.
Yep.
You got to have that. And you got to have Nebraska playing in the night games. You have an opportunity, and this is what the Big Ten wants, Nebraska and Iowa there all weekend. Iowa's already there. Mm-hmm. Nebraska, can you go match it?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it was interesting. So I was doing the Penn State Washington game yesterday for PA, and as I'm leaving the ballpark, right before the Iowa Rutgers game, hat tip to Iowa fans for a Wednesday night. They were around the ballpark. They had their equipment trailer out, their gear trailer out for people to purchase gear and everything. I mean, they're showing up, and they will only continue to show up for those games. Now, they may not be large and present tonight at 10:30 or 11, whatever that game. I know it's supposed to start at 9, but I'll be shocked if that thing starts before 10 o'clock. But hey, you know, all the best. Godspeed on that. But maybe they get a little bit of a hit in the attendance. But oh yeah, they'll be there Saturday. And so yeah, you're right. You've got one half of the equation of what draws at TD Ameritrade, I knew I'd do it. Charles Schwab Field, sorry. You've got one half of that equation. It's
basically Rosenblatt anymore. What are we talking about?
Yeah. I still sometimes call the CHI Health Center the Quest Center. So, you've got that part of it. So the Big Ten is absolutely salivating the opportunity to possibly see Nebraska and Iowa into that weekend. Because I'll say this for Iowa fans, when Nebraska's had early exits or even years that they have not made the Big Ten tournament, and Iowa's had longer stays, their fans continue to show up, and for the weekends, they really get there too. So this potentially could be huge for the Big Ten, the best case scenario on a tournament format that has been taken to the woodshed, because, you know, watching the UCLA Michigan game going on right now, I'll be very curious to see how Michigan is handling their business. Now, these are competitors, but they know this is their last game. They know they're not playing any further. So at what point do you find yourself down by a handful of runs and you're just like,
yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, you're thinking about summer ball. You're thinking about, you know, if you got draftable players, you're thinking about all that stuff. Your priority is not on the remaining four or five innings that are in that game. So the format itself, you know, we've talked about, but if you could somehow salvage this, what I think is kind of a PR disaster with the tiebreaker thing, because it has just been talked about so much and the flaw of it and why it's not necessarily good for the Big Ten. You could really have a solid rally if you got Nebraska and Iowa there in the final week or in this weekend.
Yeah, you get into the semifinals and then the format doesn't matter at all because you're down to the traditional single elimination. Yep. You're into the semifinals, and Iowa was just in the championship a couple years ago.
Yep.
And Nebraska,
obviously, good crowd.
Had a good crowd. We saw what Nebraska did last year. That place would be popping on Sunday if you could get Huskers and Hawkeyes. First up, though, Huskers do have to get by the Ducks of Oregon. Right now, it is scheduled for 6 o'clock Friday, both Big Ten Network and over the beautiful terrestrial airwaves of the Huskers radio network. 6 o'clock for now. And with all of those changes, a Big Ten spokesperson did tell me they're leaving Friday's schedule alone for the moment with a 10 a.m. first game, a 6 p.m. second game, subject to change depending on weather, as we've been able to avoid so far this week. It would also be astounding to avoid it for the entirety of the tournament in Omaha. Nick, I'm looking forward to listening to you guys. It's been a blast all season. Let's hope it's not just one more. Let's hope it's one weekend more and get through there. And then we're talking next week about something weird have happened. Just something weird. Let's get it started tomorrow night, but something weird to talk about next week.
I hope when we talk next week, I'm still hungover from a championship celebration. That's what I hope. I hope that I'm on like a 3-day hangover because I we took it all in this weekend, all the way to a Nebraska defending a Big Ten title. And if they're to do it, if that were to happen, you know it and I know it. What happened Tuesday night is not the last of late game drama, heroics, just something bizarre happening, because that is on brand with this 2025 Nebraska baseball team. I said this to Jessica Cootie yesterday. This team has that innate ability to pull you right back in. Just when you think, oh, I know how this is going to go. Oh, okay, I'm ready to start doing the chores. Okay, yep, all right, I guess that's going to do it. They do something. They pull you right back in. They get you believing. All of a sudden, they go on a little bit of a heater. You're right back with them, GBRing it, and then they do something like spike a ball into the ground. You're like, okay, what the hell is that? And then they come back and do something again. So they know how to get our attention, and I hope to God they're doing that tomorrow night, because if this thing is close late, game on, Nebraska's got a good shot.
I can guarantee you, you will not be hungover whatever the result is, because if it's a result we want, we will have some Busch Lights while we record this.
I love it. Yes. We need a championship Selly type podcast for sure.
We'll get something going. All right. Hey, have a great weekend there in Omaha. Everyone else, we'll talk again next week.